got to go. So welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Wallace Chapman here today, Friday afternoon. Political pressures mounting on the government to prioritise vaccinating South Aucklanders against COVID-19, and heading up to the first anniversary of New Zealand's first COVID-19 confirmed case, February the 28th. Dr. Colin Tukuitonga with us on the panel to discuss. Ahead of tomorrow's deadline for feedback, Consumer New Zealand has made a submission on the Retirement Villages White Paper. Have you been hunting around for a retirement village for yourself or family member? What do you make of the terms or conditions? You can text us on that, 2101. And back to Wellington issues. Certainly Wellington City has been in the news recently. The Category 1 listed Gordon Wilson flats have become a symbol of the problems in our city, writes an MP we discuss. The value of heritage or otherwise. And Mr. Potato Head is to go gender neutral, but will stay a potato. With us to discuss all of these is Wendell Nissen, broadcaster, journalist, author and editor of the new Thrive magazine. Wendell, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon. It's lovely to be here.
It's loud and clear. Wonderful to have you on. And also with us and in studio here, Peter Fa'afiu, Management Consultant, Governance Director, and that includes Global Director of Amnesty International. Peter, always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. Bula vanaka.
Bula, nice to have you both along for the ride. And let's kick off with our what we call the Friday mailbag. We've had a lot of feedback, emails and texts this week amongst all sorts of topics. So shall I kick off with housing? Caroline Daly has been a big issue. Caroline Daly, who was on the panel yesterday, said yesterday that speaking as someone who is quite equity rich, that was her words, she wouldn't buy a rental as a moral imperative. And that got a lot of discussion. Many people loved what Caroline said. John in Christchurch writes, well, good on you, St. Caroline. Some of us, though, have had to leverage our property to provide an extra income stream to feed our families. Not only that, but we provided a place to live for at least 40 people in the last 20 years. The government certainly haven't helped these tenants of ours. Many have gone from our houses to one they own themselves. And stories of how you bought your first house came through. Wallace, we bought our first home, which was a beach cottage in Waikuku, from a private seller for $4,000 in 1967. He allowed us to put a deposit of $500 down and we paid it off at $50 a month, interest-free, both working. Also, we were depositing a modest sum in the Northern Building Society weekly. Now, after a couple of years, we sold the cottage for the same amount despite upgrading, and the amount accrued added to the NBS was enough to put a deposit on a house in Redcliffs. So we bought that for $13,000 in 1970, and in 1974, we sold that for $41,000 and we became mortgage free. So it feels like another era, doesn't it, Wendell Nissen? You can buy a house for $13,000.
Oh, crikey. I think my first one was actually not too bad, was I think $80,000 over on Beach Haven. But of course, in those days, very high interest rates. You know, those were the early 80s. So we were having, you know, I think, am I dreaming? Was it like
30%?
Well, anyway,
20%, 22%, 20, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very high. But it just, I mean, it does seem to go with every generation. I mean, that's my generation. Our first homes cost us that. And it sort of goes up and up and up. That's just the way it is, I guess.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, my first home was in Johnsonville, Wellington. $220,000 in 2002. So, and I just joined Ministry of Foreign Affairs, you know, on a you know, very low salary, and so we had parental support into our first home at the time. So, I was fortunate, but many people not as fortunate as having, you know, good parents and who support you into their first home. So,
Now the return of the return of night classes, that also came up because funding over the years has been cut right back. Kay says, my husband was a civil engineer. He taught tech drawing at Polytech in Christchurch, and every year he was able to encourage a talented student or two to go on to university and to do civil engineering. He opened their eyes to further education that they and their families had not known about. And the day we talked about night classes, we had a stream of emails, and actually nigh on 98% of them said that they support night class, they saw value in it, and they got a lot out of it, be it quilting or a lot of woodwork came through. Peter, have you ever done night class in your life?
Yeah, back in Wellington, 2002, 2003, I did Spanish.
Did you?
Night classes, yep. And I don't know any of it now, but it was just to keep the mind ticking over.
Nice.
And it was before children, so before children helped keep that ticking over.
Yes. So. Do you see value in night classes? Do you still see a role of them in society?
Yeah, I think so. I'm in agreement. I mean, we're all diverse individuals, and so we have our aspirations and needs, and mine back in 2002 was Spanish, and it's no longer the case. But the opportunity before me was fantastic.
Nice.
I took it up.
Yeah. Now we also had memories. We'll do this one here. Milk and tea, and the right way to drink tea. That was a very big discussion on the panel as well. And Lester had quite a bit to say about this. Wallace, you are right. Milk goes into tea first. So that when the hot tea hits it, the fat molecules are scalded and distributed evenly through the drink. If tea goes in the cup first, then the fluid loses the heat to the cup and is no longer hot enough to scald the fat molecules in the milk. The fats then rise to the surface of the tea, and when you go to sip the tea, your lips get a coating of fat. Now, this affects the way the tea tastes. It detracts from the clean taste of tea. If you drink coffee, milk goes in last so that the fat can coat your lips, which adds to the smooth creaminess of the drink. I know all this because my father imported tea from about 1950 to when he ceased trading in the 1980s. In the 50s, our blend of tea was done in Wellington, and because I had quite a good palate, I often went with my father to help choose the blend, and the blenders taught me how to make and taste tea properly. How about that as a story?
Yeah, I love tea, and I put milk in first, but I was taught, so it's just become part of ritual. I was taught that
so
by my
mother. Right. Lester would say that you're right. Wendell, what about you? You might not have heard that particular thing, but when you drink tea, is it milk in first or last?
Oh, absolutely, milk in first. Teapot tea too, no tea bag.
Yeah.
And turn the teapot around three times before you pour it, every single time. And
yep.
That's just my childhood speaking there. I can't stop it.
Yeah, same here.
And memories of the Led Zepp concert in 1972, they came through. You sort of had some wonderful responses, including this. Don says, I was there. Western Springs, 1972. And yesterday it was to the day that it was on. I was a 17-year-old schoolboy living on the shore. It was amazing. As soon as I heard those opening chords of Immigrant Song you played, I was back there. The sound was magnificent. It was huge. It was rock and roll concert, bar none. Plus, of course, a huge cloud of weed of smoke, in brackets, exceeded later at the Bob Marley concert. I recall the news the next day. People in Devonport moaning. The thing is, it was a beautiful, calm February evening. Classic Auckland inversion layer on the bridge and all of that. Of course, the sound travelled up the harbour. I also recall later the newly gentrified inhabitants of Westmere and Grey Lynn getting the sound police onto Western Springs. That's grossly unreasonable, the venue, concerts, racing, etc., and the house priced accordingly. All that said, the subsequent 1978 Cheap Trick concert at the Auckland Town Hall topped Led Zeppelin's sound. My ears were ringing for days after that one. All the best, Don of Wellington. So thank you very much to all your responses there. Now it's time for I've Been Thinking. Wendell Nissen, you first.
Look, I'm sorry to be so philosophical. I know there are deep and meaningful things happening out there in the world of politics, but I've been thinking a lot about failure. And as a former high achiever, I no longer count myself as one, I think it's a really good idea to sit down sometimes and think about the things you failed at and look at them and go, why did that happen? Am I better off for it? Was that a good thing to fail at, actually? And if you sit down and do that, it's actually really good for you. And I think in these times where things are rough, things are different, things are changing, it can quite often be quite useful to just take the pressure off yourself and go, okay, it's okay to fail. And I've been listening to a podcast called How to Fail, where this journalist gets all these very famous people to come on and say how they fail. So there's nothing better than hearing that.
Yeah.
But I, that pretty much what I've been thinking about. Take the pressure off everyone. Stop trying to be, you know, who does five-year goals anymore? I used to do them religiously. Don't do that.
5-year goals, that's right.
I would make my husband sit down and go, right, what's our 5-year plan now? And he'd just look at me like, oh, my goodness, he's never had any goals in his life. You just do day-to-day things. And if you're not good at it, then you do something else. And another podcast, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, I heard about a study where they went back to all these people who had had major life issues happen in their lives and said, would you, if you could go back and stop that happening, would you? And 90% of them said no. I'd still have that happen because this, and this happened afterwards. So that's what I've been thinking. Let's embrace failure.
It's so interesting, and actually it's so relatable, Wendell, hearing people who've done well also speak of their failures. I've said this before on the radio, but one book that I read by this great American novelist, David Vann, he wrote an extraordinary book called One Mile Down, where he had this idea of doing these creative writing classes around the Greek islands. So he got this boat built. Problem was, the boat was an utter failure. It didn't work. It sank. He lost all his money. But it was a great read.
Yeah.
It was quite something.
Yeah, I mean, when I used to recruit, when I was chief executive and general manager, I used to recruit staff. There were two questions that were most insightful. One was, where are you from? Tell us about your family and your background. And secondly was, tell us about your failures and what you learned from it. And they were the two most insightful recruitment questions for me. Better than, the structured questions that you get provided by a recruitment company.
Wow.
Because, that's when you get to see the real person and the real... And you get to, have a proper conversation with them. The technical stuff you'll learn, but, questions like that, what are your failures and how do you learn from them, and how would you project that in this current role? Those are the types of questions that are more insightful into someone's human nature.
All right. Just a news update here. The police have named the man who was shot by officers in the Auckland suburb of Papatoetoe and died later in hospital. He was a 34-year-old Tangaru Noere Turia. Police have named the man shot by officers in Papatoetoe. Coming up into 4 o'clock, I've been thinking, Peter, for you.
Yeah, it's a short one. So I've been taking a course at my local Catholic parish out in Pukekohe, and it's about bringing folks together and talking about challenges in their life. And the biggest challenge that I've got at the moment is, I've got 6 kids, as you know, Wallace, and 4 of them are boys, and I'm raising 4 boys to be, this is my aspiration, to be good men. How can I raise, these young boys to be good men in their environment and futures to come, but also be productive citizens of this country? And that's a simple question when you sort of articulate it. But the bringing up boys is challenging. And I've got one, the oldest has reached 13. And now you've
13,
and is at college, and sort of you. And so, I mean, many out there of your listeners have been through this. But I've sort of taken this sort of course at church to sort of reflect and seek advice and sort of share learnings amongst fathers. It's a great, when you whether it be in this church environment or any other environment, it's great in 2021 in New Zealand that we can sit down and share as men and as best practice, but their learnings of how to be a good father in order for their sons to be good men as well in this country.
Wonderful, wonderful thoughts, Peter. And Wendell, thank you very much for that. Wendell, listen, Peter, for you on this afternoon on today's panel, NZ National, 4 to 5, stay with us.